New York marketing strategist. I haven't even had a drink yet.
And now let's listen to her say Chipotle. Chipotle.
Do you want to finish the sentence?
Yes.
Okay. She is a strategist for Chipotle.
Nice to meet
you. Thank you.
Easy for you
and
to
she's
say.
Going to be talking about this very cool hacking festival that is actually sponsored by Chipotle, and they're all going to be tackling the problems, like sort of in the restaurant's back offices. So we're going to hear about how they're making that happen up in New York City right now.
And Mary McCauley's here. She's a new wine producer who's making waves with her clam bake Chardonnay. Which we also can't see or taste. This is dry.
It looks delicious.
It's like prohibition. But let's start with Steve. Steve, we have Michael who will tell us all about Tico, but let's start with you and the whole cocktail program there, because I know you've created a bunch of special drinks, particularly focused on tequila.
Just like our brand in Boston, we have over 125 tequilas. We have a nice array of mezcals as well, some aged, some not aged. Like the brand itself, it's really about food and fun and energy. We're doing some different things with the in addition to tequila, but we have a añejo barrel aged beer with us today with a collaboration with Avion and DC Brow, which we won't be tasting.
Right,
but it looks lovely. That's on tap. It goes on the menu today.
So how did you guys do that?
We have a relationship with Avion from our property in West Hollywood at the Sunset Marquee, and we met the president and we talked about it, and I know Brandon
for
a long time.
Well, for people who don't know what Avion is, can you explain it a little bit?
Who has not seen Entourage?
I'm just saying. Give it a
Avion
little more
is
detail, please.
Is a great brand from Jalisco. They've Reposado Añejo and Blanco.
Anybody who listens to Howard Stern knows what Avion is already. So
okay.
Avion.
It was Turtle's brand that he blew up on Entourage. But it's a terrific product. We do well with it out west. We were lucky enough to meet the president out there, and she shipped some Añejo barrels right to DC Brow,
and it's been in barrel
for 3 months.
Shooting it with Brian Friday night at that bar in Rockville. It's smooth as can be. It's delicious.
We were so lucky. What a great collaboration between Avion and DC Brow. We took the citizens, put it in barrel. It's been in barrel since mid March, and literally it's on tap today.
So what does
Steve and I may have tasted just a little bit of it this morning.
Just a little.
We had to make sure it didn't suck. Nobody's tried it yet.
So I'm just curious, what does the barrel, that flavor, that tequila flavor, do to the beer?
That's a great question, because
we were going to discuss it this morning.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Citizens is a higher, one of their higher proof, one of their higher ABV beers, and it really rounds it out. You don't taste tequila, but it adds some floral tones. It's really easy drinking. It adds almost like a creaminess to the beer.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little. It adds some body, even though it reduces the heat. You know, you don't taste the alcohol as much. I think it's not like doing
a shot in a beer in one.
Okay,
that's for sure.
Right. Well, it's not like the alcohol leaches in, does it?
No.
I think for the next, we have another round going now, but for the next group of barrels that we get, we'd like ones maybe not as retired.
Okay.
We found, you know, on the way from Mexico to D.C., they stopped at a retirement home in Hollywood, Florida, and it ended up...
That's where my Grandma Tanya was. May she rest in pieces.
They have a great early bird special. Yes.
Exactly.
Do you see anyone in a leopard motif leotard with torn leggings? That would have been my grandmother.
Oh, God.
Yeah, stop Steve cold. All right, so Michael, let's turn to you a little. What you got, Tico? What is a Tico?
What is a Tico? It
yes.
actually is a thing, or a person. Actually, it's an affectionate term in Costa Rica for a local or a friend, and I just love the word and what it means.
It's like a paisan.
Exactly. Or, you know, in America, we would say, hey, man, how's it going? And in Costa Rica, they'd say, ¿qué pasa, Tico? You know, so we have one of my business partners who is also our culinary director, Luis Morales, is from Costa Rica. And he's this very quiet, very sort of maniacal tactician. And he would never want a restaurant named after him. And he doesn't want to be in the limelight. So he's our Tico.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, for people
you just called him maniacal on the radio.
Well, he is.
That's really gonna when he comes back and you see that big butcher knife.
Yeah. he's intense.
It was pretty close to being called Luis's, though. No.
No.
Let me ask you. For people who aren't familiar with you or your restaurants, can you give us a little bit of background how you got into this and this kind of cuisine, and give us your 411?
Well, I mean, this is a fairly new concept in that the first one was in 2011, and mm-hmm. my background really was more in Italian cooking and modern French cooking, and if you were to come to my house, quite frankly, you know, 9 times out of 10, you'd get Italian or Greek food. My wife's Greek.
Actually, we're available. I'm just letting you know.
And we serve alcohol at our house.
Okay.
So you can come over anytime. And you don't have to eat in the hallway either. You can eat right at the table.
This is great. I know you're making me feel like a terrible host.
No. You're a fantastic host. There's beautiful bagels and cream cheese. It's a nice Sunday morning here.
Oh, thank you. Next time we're going to bring locks, at the very least.
So, you know, I'm the first job I ever had was as a dishwasher, and I've done every job in a restaurant. I think it's important that you have a good foundation in any business that you're going to be in, but especially in the restaurant business, you have to know what every single
job
entails.
Our son Sam is currently working his way up the food chain, literally.
It's important, and don't be in a rush. And so, you know, my dad taught me that stay at a job for a long period of time and learn everything that you can. And I'm proud of the sort of background that I was given, and you know, I didn't come from a family of restaurateurs or chefs. My dad was a lawyer. He's from here in D.C. Mm-hmm. But I always loved doing this. And there was this interaction between the guest and the restaurant that just really sort of called to me. And I don't think of it as work. That's the best attribute I could say about the job, is that it's not work. It's fun, and I enjoy it. We throw a dinner party every night. Who doesn't want to do that?
I know. Well, I don't. I mean, I like to. I like to entertain. But
if
you
somebody
know,
else cleans up for you.
Unfortunately, she married somebody that hates people. So.
Right. So then what brought you to, given your background and the kinds of food that you prefer cooking, what brought you to the concept of Tico?
So Tico really was bred out of travel and imagination. And so places that I love to go, I do love to go to Italy, and I go at least once a year. But this restaurant was really bred out of Spain, Mexico, and South America. And as I go to these places, there's this common thread where the people just have this incredible zest for life. Everything's about gathering together, breaking bread, drinking wine, you know, having a good time, and sharing stories around the table. And so when the opportunity presented itself in Boston for Tico, I really sort of just developed that concept based on my travels and my love for these places.
And now, why D.C.?
Well, D.C. has always been a place that I've wanted to come and work. Half my family is from here, and I used to come down and visit my grandmother in Silver Spring, mm-hmm. and I would try to get into Jean-Louis Paladin's kitchen when he would let me in and stage, and I'd sleep at my grandmother's house.
Did you stage there?
I did, many times, yeah. So, it was a beautiful time in his restaurant. I mean, he really was one of the best cooks I had ever seen, one of the best chefs, and I always wanted to sort of emulate his passion for the business, and he's dearly missed. And so I would come down here. My sister went to school here. So I've been around D.C. my whole life and watched this grow into what was a very good restaurant town into a great restaunt town.
Okay,
and
it was
so,
not a very good restaurant town for a very long time.
You know, it's funny, though. I'll disagree with you, because I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and we had just sort of the same kind of food all over the place. You know, it was either Chinese or Italian or steakhouse. And we'd come here and we'd eat Ethiopian and all these different ethnic foods that we didn't
enough.
Get.
All right.
So let's talk about Tico specifically, so we don't let that run away.
Okay.
The concept.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the menu.
David hasn't been yet.
Well,
so
I haven't been yet.
What...
See, Nikki goes and I get left home with the kids, but now the kids are at camp, so I'll be there.
I hope so. Good.
But I mean, we want to talk about the look and your wife's artwork and all that.
Well,
but
your wife's artwork is insane.
Stop.
I love
talking.
Your wife's artwork.
You're talking. Okay. Talk about the food.
So the food is, again, it's really bred out of the first original component of it are these places, you know, Spain, Mexico, and South America. And they're, you know, very specific cuisines in each area. And it depends on how you break them down. But what I wanted to do is not make anything. I know this is going to sound so crazy, but nothing that was too authentic. It was really about my imagination. And we start with the concept of acid, salt, and chilies. And if you take those three components and then bring in the flavor profiles of the places that I just spoke about, that is the genesis. That's the starting point, the sort of kernel we started with. And then it's really about having fun and making nothing that is too authentic. Like, you won't see a big, you know, metal pan of paella ever at Tico. But you'll see crispy fried chicken tacos with fennel coleslaw and buttermilk dressing.
Yum.
Or like the dishes we brought today, where it's shrimp ceviche with ají amarillo.
Oh, my mouth just filled up with saliva. It's like, bleh, bleh, bleh.
So, you know, it's a little playful, and there's a lot of great Very authentic style restaurants on 14th Street. You know, you have Barcelona and Estadio and Masa and El Centro that are doing specific cuisines to a very original form, and we are the alternative to those places.
Okay. I'll tell you what I read about that I really liked, that whole idea of, you know, when I can't decide what I want, the can't decide menu and the forgot lunch and all that stuff. Where'd that idea come from?
So when I first presented the menus to my team, they first thing they were shocked by how many items were on the menu.
It's very big menu.
There's about 50 items on the menu.
It's overwhelming.
And the food, the menu itself can be overwhelming. And so if you're looking at it, and hopefully the things speak to you and say, oh, I want that, and I want that, and I want that, and you keep saying that, let's just cook for you. Tell us how much money you want to spend and how hungry you are.
Smart.
I really
and
love
we
that
just
concept.
Feed you.
I do too.
And it's worked out really, really well.
What if I say that I want you to pay me? Will that work?
So
of course.
Because we were actually at a restaurant last night that I love, but the menu is overwhelming for me and I'm not that current on the cuisine. So I wish somebody would be like, okay, I gotcha.
It's really the way we all want to eat. I mean, we crave something and we hope that that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, isn't it so much more fun to not know what's coming? If you're a little adventuresome, you know, to not know is, I think that's the way I like to eat. Like, just, you know, feed me. Whatever you think's best, feed me.
Some people are so linear, though, when they feel like they have to know what they're getting. You know, we had some guests in recently that they're, you know, they were like, oh, no, I want the crepe tostada, and I want the manchego, and I want the cabbage salad. It's like, well,
we're not deciding anymore.
Right. Sounds like you know what you want.
Yeah. Why don't you just order that?
All right. Well, we have to take a quick break. But when we come back, I really want to talk about your wife's artwork and the design of the place, because it's really very different and special. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Our federal employees have played an important role in upholding our national values and beliefs. GEICO would like to recognize their contribution and wish all federal employees and their families a very happy and safe 4th of July weekend. For over 75 years, GEICO's been helping federal employees save money on their car insurance, and they'd like to do the same for you. So if you're a federal employee or belong to a federal association like BIG, FLIOA, or NARF, find out how much you can save with a federal employee discount. Don't wait. Go to GEICO.com today or call 1-800-947-AUTO to get a fast, free rate quote. That's GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. Keep all your weekends safe and get peace of mind with GEICO Auto Insurance. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then,
hey!
The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Hey, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Michael Schlau, who has just opened Tico, and his head of operations, Steve Ure, who is talking about booze but not able to pour any. But let's talk about the interior, because it's pretty exceptional, and your wife had a big hand in it. So what's going on there?
She did. My wife, Adrienne, is a mixed media artist, and she and I really collaborated on this design. She did all of the distressed brickwork, the columns, but all the paintings that you see, she did those. You know, a lot of the tabletops and the chairs and that sort of stuff, that design work I do with an architect. But she helped me immeasurably. And, you know, sometimes, as you two probably know, working with your spouse cannot, you know, there could be some.
It's perfect, never.
It's always perfect.
It's called You Bet Your Marriage.
Yeah, and so what I did in embedding that, when she said, what do you want? from the look, I said, you know what?
I want what you want, honey.
Exactly. And it was that moment.
Well, you
where
guys
I,
are really bonding over
yes,
here.
Yes, dear, you're
it's
right
really
here.
Nice.
I'm sorry, dear, and I'll never do it again,
Why isn't
dear,
your
right?
wife here? She should be here,
no,
too.
But she would tell you the same thing that I said, I trust you, and you're the artist, and do what feels right.
Do you
and,
ever, when you're alone in the house, go, yo, Adrienne, like that?
No, she would not
I'm
be
I'm sure
happy
he
about
has
that,
never
yes.
heard that before. Yes.
I don't know, I'm just asking.
And really, her work is getting so much attention here. I'm really proud of her. People have wanted to buy pretty much every piece already.
Well, you've got two pieces in there that are really spectacular. They're very risque.
They are. The one about, are we allowed to say that on Sunday morning?
I think I
one?
Could say risque. Okay.
Can you say kinky? Because
right?
I think that's in the picture. Yeah,
we could say kinky.
So the story behind
this. Andy, how far can we go? What else can we say?
There's this one painting in the bar that is of this outline of this woman and the lettering on it says it only feels kinky the first time.
It's so
and
it,
it's something
that's
she
what
overheard.
I keep telling Nikki. She won't listen.
And that, everybody wants that painting so far. But she's done a beautiful job, and she really made the restaurant design sing, I think. You know, I was happy with it, but when she was finished with her work, I really love it.
Well,
now.
Talk about what she did to the columns, because the place is brand new.
But it doesn't feel like it.
It does
so,
not feel like
so
it.
So one of the sort of efforts and directions and that we were trying to accomplish was that with it being a brand new building, we wanted to feel as if they built this building around a restaurant that had been there for a long time. So she went in, there was a brand new brick wall, brand new columns, and she basically, you know, took all her aggressions out on these places, and she distressed all of them. And she has a method that she does that takes a lot of time, but she came down here by herself, you know, in jeans and goggles and a t-shirt, and just basically beat up the walls, and they look great. I mean, I'm really, really happy with it. So much so that we'll probably end up doing it to Tico Boston.
Really?
Yeah.
So the look at Tico Boston is very different.
Yeah, I mean, each space that I do, you know, we have 7 restaurants, and they're in different parts of the country, mm-hmm. and they're not all Ticos. Some are Italian, some are American. But the idea really is that they should all be about the community that they live in. And so 14th Street has a feel and a grittiness and an edge. And we wanted to make sure that we evoked that. And so the one in Boston is in a big office building in the middle of Back Bay, and so it feels a little different. I mean, they're definitely feel like they're sister restaurants. There's mm-hmm. elements that are the same, but there's a lot that's different.
Well, I think it's important when a restaurateur comes to a new city to fit in with the city instead of making your concept, the city adapt to your concept.
No question about it. And also being here, you know, it was something that was very important. I'm living here right now. I mean, I have an apartment here and I reverse commute to go home to see my family mm-hmm. and they come down here. But I think it's important to be present. You know, this is a very important part for me.
The restaurant graveyard in this town is full of people that came here with an attitude that, you know, I'm bringing you my restaurant from New York, lucky you. And they're DOA because they didn't fit in.
Washingtonians will not tolerate that. I mean, as somebody who's been
here. They'll not tolerate
exactly
that.
Exactly right. We'll throw you right out.
That's right. We have our methods. All right. So hang tight because we're going to talk to you and Steve as we go through the rest of the show. But on the phone is Mariana Cotlier. Mariana, are you there?
I'm here. Hi.
Hi, Mariana. How are you?
I am really great. I am reporting live from the floor of General Assembly here in New York City, where we're surrounded by hackers creating awesome programs to help food service companies be better.
Well, okay, can you explain what a hacker is for those who don't know? Because we had to do our homework to figure it out.
Well, a hacker has a negative connotation,
exactly.
But hacking has now become something, it's become more innovation instead of intrusion. So why don't you explain it?
Yeah, you know, it's really funny. I mean, it totally depends who you talk to. I think inside the tech world, you know, which I'm certainly not a part of it, but I've like touched it in a couple of different ways. That sounds weird. That's not what I meant to say, but you know what I mean.
We can touch it. We just can't see it.
We can't see it, but that's
okay. We
don't
want to see you touching it.
It's you know, it's basically it's like a tinkerer, you know, it's like somebody who wants to kind of get in and figure out how technology works and make it work better. So a hackathon is basically an event where, you know, a bunch of coders, developers, programmers, designers get together to very intensively tackle a specific challenge. And, you know, ideally actually build a product that can be used in the market to address that challenge. So it's pretty cool.
Well, let me ask this, because there are really two questions. Question number one is, how do you draw in these coders and amateur hackers and whatever to do this? And then what challenges do you present them with?
Yeah, so great question. So I'm here representing Team Chipotle. We're one of the partners in the event, and we're presenting a challenge. But the organizer of this event is a media company called Food and Tech Connect. And they, you know, as their name would imply, are kind of this interesting gathering place for the food and the tech world. You know, there are all these really cool startups that are trying to do innovative things with food and technology. And so they draw the hackers from that community.
So what are the challenges that have been issued since this event started on Friday, right?
It did. Yeah, exactly. So from Chipotle's perspective, our challenge is, I think it's pretty neat. So we're asking hackers to help us figure out how technology might help us better design our restaurants to be more sustainable. So we actually have a team of our in-house architecture and design team that's looking for ways that we can, you know, use sensors in our restaurants or, nudge people to do things in a greener way. And, you know, we're hoping that these really smart people can bring us some pretty cool ideas.
Who are some of the other people issuing challenges?
So the other companies that are also issuing challenges are Google and their food service team.
Mm-hmm. No slaps there.
I've never heard of them. Are they?
Are they local?
Yeah. They actually are local.
I know. Those Googlers get free food everywhere, all over the world. It's pretty awesome. And Applegate, the organic meat company, and Battalion Bastianich Restaurant Group.
So what kind of challenges are they tackling?
So they're tackling all kinds of different things. Google is presenting a challenge related to wellness. So they, you know, they're really interested in creating the happiest, healthiest workforce out there. And they're asking, you know, the hackers to help them with technology that can help, you know, again, kind of nudge people in a positive direction in various ways. Mm-hmm. The Batali team is looking for ways restaurants can navigate the very complex and myriad set of health code regulations for food establishments. Sounds unsexy, but actually I think could be like super helpful for food companies.
But so in these specific challenges, they're looking for like apps or technical ways in order to, I'm trying to figure out like how these hackers, what do they come up with for these challenges?
Yeah, so what they're developing are, you know, they're developing websites, apps, and in some cases actually integrated hardware. Mm-hmm. Products that can either, you know, use data in a way that helps us do things better or find new ways to collect data that we haven't been able to collect before.
All right. So why don't you, first of all, this is all happening in New York. Can those of us in other spots see this going on? Is there a website where we can watch it?
Yeah, so I'm not sure that it's being live streamed. You should definitely follow along on social media. The hashtag is #HackDining. Mm-hmm. And then via Food Tech Connect's website, you should be able to go in for some live updates on #HackDining and the different challenges that are being presented specifically.
And who is judging this? And then what happens? Like, does one team win, or do all of these? If there's a real, or if all of them are really good, do they get funding? I mean, what happens next?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I don't know all of the judges, but I know that, you know, so for example, Wiley Dufresne from WD50 mm-hmm. Is one of the judges, and then various kind of luminaries in the technology world here in New York are going to be there judging as well. From our end, Chipotle is offering what I think is a pretty awesome prize, which is they're going to be able to spend a day with our director of architecture and design, kind of going around New York and viewing some interesting trends in the retail space, mm-hmm. With the idea that, you know, if they've developed something that can be used in the market, we can help, you know, provide a little bit of guidance and mentorship on where those products might be able to go. And I think that the other challenge presenters are, you know, they're going to be doing similar things. And then, of course, The hackers are going to own the intellectual property that they create. So if it's something that is viable in the market, then they can actually turn it into a real company or sell the idea and make money off of it.
Well, I've got something they can work on because I want to know why, because our kids love Chipotle, but nobody can say Chipotle. They all say Chipotle. No. So why don't you have your hackers work on that?
They don't. That is so stupid.
It's so funny because we recently opened some restaurants overseas in England, and those
they call it Chipotle.
Chipotle, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, let's get some Chipotle.
So are there more hackathons coming up?
You know, this is one of a series that this company has produced over the last few years. Mm-hmm. Last year, they did two hackathons centered on sustainable meat. And I don't know what will come after this. I think that...
Did you all participate in that? Did you participate in that one?
No, we actually didn't. We watched from afar and thought it was pretty cool, which is why we jumped in on the opportunity to do this one.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I think that they might be bringing this over to the West Coast as well, so that, you know, the Silicon Valley tech community can get a chance to show their hacking might, too.
So we've got about 90 seconds. What do the winners get? If I go and spend my weekend doing this and come up with a kick-butt idea, what do I get for it?
She already told you.
No, I want to... I get free Chipotle?
Yeah, from our end, they get an opportunity to hang out with one of the leaders in restaurant design and learn from him. And then, you know, I'm not totally sure what the other companies are offering, but I think similar cool opportunities like that.
Like mentorship.
Overall, what we all get is the opportunity to, you know, share with each other and learn some pretty cool ideas of what, you know, the next wave of restaurant innovation is going to
look very altruistic. I want the Benjamins.
How do we find out who wins?
So I think if you follow along using the Hack Dining hashtag, you'll be able to see it. And then the results will be published tonight at foodtechconnect.com.
Cool. All right. Well, Mariana, thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck with all your tech stuff.
With all your hacking.
Awesome. Yeah, don't get hacked. Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
All right. Take care. And remember, it's Chipotle. Chipotle. Right. Not Chipotle.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Bye.
This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Friends, families, and teams, lace up your running shoes and meet me at the ballpark for the KC Cares 5K at Oriole Park. Hi, I'm Baltimore Orioles right fielder Nick Markakis. Join my family and me Saturday, August 2nd, as we kick off the event. You'll be running to help a critically ill child. Both the 3.1-mile race and the mile walk begin at Cannon Yards and actually end on the field. Visit kccares5k.org to register now.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
The National Building Museum presents Designing for Disaster, a new exhibition exploring how design, engineering, and construction respond to natural disasters. Discover how we can save lives and build more resilient communities. Featuring the interactive Wall of Wind, where visitors of all ages can test proof performance in hurricane force winds. Open now at the National Building Museum. Find hours and admission information online at nbm.org. That's nbm.org.
We're back with David and Nikki Nellis on Foodie and the Beast. Oddly enough, I'm David Nellis.
Yes.
And we're talking again with Steve.
And you are odd. It's a fact.
You married me.
I did.
And it's been 20 years.
We have not been married 20 years.
We've been together 20 years.
We've been together 20 years.
We've been together 21 years. Lucky you. Luckiest woman on the earth. Anyways, Steve and Michael.
Old? Am I that old?
You are that old.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah, you're an old broad now, boy. You're stuck with me.
I was so young when I met you.
I know, so stupid. But here you are. Back to Tico. So you guys, and back to the tequila program. I read something in all the materials about if I drink 88 of the tequilas, I join a special club and... Will I still be alive once
that sounds so you. I can really see you going there.
You have 8
that.
Months to do it.
So it's not all right, you know, one in a row.
Yeah, you don't have to do it in one shot.
That would be interesting to see what would happen, though.
Oh, my God.
Instead of a hackathon, we could do like a shot-a-thon.
Yeah, a tequila-thon.
They're actually not even shots. I mean, they're sipping tequilas. I mean, so that's why we give you 8 months to do it.
So what's the program? What do I get when I do all that?
Yeah, what do you get, Steve?
You get a lot of swag.
You get to spend a day.
What about swing?
You get to spend a day with Steve. Not with Steve.
Wait, is that a prize?
Absolutely.
All right.
So you'll get an engraved shot glass. We invite you and three of your favorite people to hang out with to come in.
What if I don't have three favorite people?
Right. Then you can do it all yourself. It's just a lot of tequila that you're going to have to drink by yourself.
We do seminars. Like we'll bring tequila makers in. And
so tastings and all of
that.
Yeah,
we do tastings and we do special dinners. I mean, tequila lovers, you know, people that are really into this, boy, they are committed.
Well, let me ask a question. I mean, there must be 250, 350 brands of tequila. Mm-hmm. But rock stars are doing it and all that. Why not have your own brand of tequila? Has that ever come up?
Not yet. I mean,
I'll sell you that idea, by the way.
Okay, thank you. You just got that at the hackathon.
I'm all inspired.
We haven't thought about that yet. And, you know, there are laws about owning a distillery or a winery and then owning the restaurant.
Oh, that's true.
So
really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So certain
a
states
conflict
you can't
of
do it.
Interest?
Yeah.
Yes, a conflict of interest.
So there's certain states you can't
DC's
do it.
DC's pretty loose, though. You may be able to get away with it here.
Fancy
okay.
free.
We're already in trouble here, Steve. Yeah. Don't
all right,
say
so.
DC's
well, no,
loose.
I mean, if you're talking about the tequila club, something that we can do here that we can't do at our sister restaurant in Boston is we could probably give somebody a bottle of tequila to have with their dinner, whereas in Boston, in Massachusetts, I don't think you can do that.
Well, no, you can sell the bottle. That's not the problem. You can't have happy hour in Boston.
Really?
No happy hour. You guys just launched one here, though.
We did. Just started Monday, and it's off to a great start.
What does happy hour mean for Tico?
It starts at 4 o'clock. It goes from 4 to 7. There's all sorts of special foods that we do.
Yeah, the small plates, right?
Lots of small plates. And, you know, it's an American restaurant, I mean, at its heart. And so... What's more American than happy hour, right? I mean, so I don't think – who else has happy hour besides America?
I don't know. Maybe they're just unhappy. They sound like they're unhappy in Boston.
Big time.
So, Steve, since you cannot make the cocktails in studio, can you tell us what you were planning on making today?
Absolutely. What we are not starting with. Everybody loves on a Sunday morning bubbles. So we have a couple cool sparklings in the restaurant. One of them is called Baja Tanga.
And what does that translate to, Steve?
It
translates to Tico.
Well, you can't. I don't think I can say it with these restrictions.
Lower.
But if you Google it, make sure there's no children around.
Okay.
It's kind of
a deal closer, if you will. It came up with all the crazy
is it a body
club.
Part?
No, it's about women's underwear.
It's
one of my favorite subjects. The whole show is going to be dedicated.
The whole show has just changed dramatically.
You know, the crazy clubs in Argentina and Buenos Aires, and it was something that inspired this.
How do you say it again?
Buenos Aires.
It means panty dropper.
It's a off-dry sparkling made out of Malbec.
Aires. Yeah.
And it's great, and it's a little off-dry. It's perfect with the food, and it makes you happy. So then when everybody's happy and feeling a little...
So is that a part of a cocktail mix?
No, it's not. It was just something we were going to start with, because who doesn't like bubbles on a Sunday morning?
So is it a wine?
It's a sparkling wine. We saw it by the bottle.
I'm just trying to get my head around.
Okay. After I said panty dropper,
he's lost now.
How could a sparkling wine make me drop my panties?
Not you.
Not you. And nobody wants you to drop whatever.
Oh, I think everyone wants me to drop my panties, baby.
Oh, my God.
The next beverage we're not having today.
What's the next beverage we're not drinking?
The next beverage. Hold on. Let me not shake it.
Just water.
Just water and ice.
I swear.
And it's on happy hour too. It's our hibiscus margarita. It's on draft. It's on happy hour. It's tough to keep up with the demand for it.
We knew it was going to be popular. We had no idea it was going to be this popular. So we ended up making it as a draft cocktail. And how many did you sell last night?
Like 300, something like that.
Oh, my God.
It was crazy.
All to one person who's right. Now the member of a club.
They own the club, actually, now.
All right, we have to get over to Mary. We'll finish up with the last cocktail at the very end. Mary?
Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
So, Mary McCauley, you're a winemaker, you're an inventor, you're a Jersey Shore native. I like that.
Most importantly.
I know, but your hair is really flat.
I'm in D.C., so, yeah. I didn't tease it up today.
So, you've got this, you've got a company, but you created a wine called Clambake Chardonnay in a very kind of offhanded way. You became a wine producer.
Yeah, very offhanded. As you said, I grew up on the Jersey Shore, so I'm a big clam baker. And I also, went to culinary school and sommelier and all that. So I guess how everyone in this room probably is, you become the unofficial guru for literally every family and friend member when they need a restaurant recommendation, and for me, especially a wine recommendation. Mm-hmm. So, I was always charged with the task of getting the wine for the clam bake. And in 2011, we had one, and I said, you know what, for next year's clam bake, I'm going to make the wine. I'm going to rent a small tank, and I knew exactly what I wanted to make, and that would be a crisp, light, unoaked Chardonnay. And I designed the label, and it was just going to be a hobby. And I started telling people and showing people the label, and everyone was like, I'd buy that. I would buy that. And so I went for real and did it.
How many people were at the first clam bake that you did this for?
Probably like 20-something, maybe like 30 people. Towards the end of the night, it's how the Jersey Shore is. It starts out, you're cooking for 25, and then by the end,
Bruce Springsteen is playing.
By the end of the night, you're scrounging around for beers for 45. So
so clam bake Chardonnay. How did you take that next step? I mean, you're not making the wine, so how do you go
exactly.
about putting it together?
So I'd like to clarify that. I am technically in the industry considered a négociant.
Okay.
And that's French. That's French. I know. Well, many people.
That doesn't mean panty dropper, too.
It does, actually.
But anyway, so I'm a négociant. So basically, I contract, I buy grapes in bulk. Yeah. I contract a winemaker. I rent or purchase barrels or steel tanks. That's my style. I just kind of am producing the project. And then the benefit to me being on the East Coast primarily is that I do all the sales and marketing and that kind of stuff. So
how do you go about selecting the grapes that you want? I mean, do you go out to California, taste the grapes? I mean, how often are you traveling back and forth checking on the wine?
Last year, in my first year of production, I was out there quite a bit.
Okay.
And then in the second year of production, I really found a winemaker. His name is David Sundberg. And I've met some friends out in California, other wine buddies. And I really trust them, and they really help me out. Mm-hmm. And in return, I help them out on the East Coast. So if they're like, I need to get a bottle to this restaurant in New York City, I will drop everything and I will go do that tasting appointment for them.
Okay.
And if I say I'm having an issue out there with, the vintner and, I need you to go check on the wine, mm-hmm. they're there.
So what you're saying, and then granted, because you're a somm too, so you're mm-hmm. trained, mm-hmm. but it's possible to become a wine mogul without actually owning a vineyard and having a whole production operation.
It's actually it's a little less risky the way I do it because every year the weather can change, and owning a vineyard in one spot, you're married to that piece of property.
Right.
Whereas this year, I'm always seeking out a value. So last year I sourced my grapes from Santa Lucia Highlands, which is in Monterey.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there, in particular because they do grow Chardonnay, but it's a cold region. So the grapes don't get as ripe, so they maintain more acid. So it's not that big kind of syrupy Chardonnay. It's more, I'll just say people who only drink Pinot Grigio still drink my wine.
Okay.
So I went there last year, and the soil type was perfect because it's so close to the ocean. It's got a lot of a prehistoric oyster shell element in the soil, so it would give it that mineral background. So I sourced the grapes, found a famous Chardonnay winemaker there, said, you're making your Chardonnay from these grapes. How about, doing my project? Blah, blah, blah. Everything was great. Right after the project was done, Santa Lucia Highlands got named the number one cold growing region for Chardonnay in California.
Wow, what timing.
So when I went back to, buy grapes and talk to this guy again, he was like, I cannot meet your price.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, but that's fine.
Right.
And, I'd love to have gone back there, but then, it would be $25 on the shelf.
Well, but price 16. Is a good thing to talk about because as a small producer, when you're producing in volume, mm-hmm. your per unit price can be lower because you're getting a volume benefit out of it. So how do you keep your price in line?
Well, right now, I mean,
what is the price?
The price for retail is about $16.
Okay, which is very reasonable.
Yeah, and I have to keep it at that. It's called the Clam Bake Chardonnay. Right. You know, I can't just, you know, say, oh, I'm going to go to Chablis next year and buy bulk Chardonnay. It'd be $45 on the shelf, right. You know. But anyway, so... Yeah, it's at $16, and basically, you know, what's happening right now is I'm not taking away too much money, you know? I'm still doing, you know, in-house...
I saw that Maserati out front.
I'm still doing other gigs to kind of make ends meet until I do get to that volume where, okay, now you get the price break on the grapes and the glass and the labels and all that.
Well, are you looking to do other wines? I mean, do you have other ideas?
I do, actually...
Like Crab Feast?
Actually, in 4 weeks, I'll be releasing a really light and crisp rosé called the Clam Bake Rosé.
Okay.
And, you know, typically I would say white wine is really where you want to go with the clam bake, but this is such a light, delicate rosé that if you were to close your eyes and I gave it to you, you might not even know it was rosé. But there's just...
Well, I drink... my husband does not like it, but I mean, once the minute it gets to 80 degrees, nice. All I want to drink is rosé.
Well,
I love it.
Beautiful.
It's just such a beautiful wine.
Yeah, and also lobster and rosé is a classic pairing. Mm. So, you know, that little touch of Bing cherry or wild strawberry in the rosé really brings out the sweetness in corn and steamers and lobster. So the rosé in a clam bake actually is a nice pairing, as long as it's a really light, crisp style, more like a French style rosé, not really like a Spanish style rosé.
Okay, which is what I prefer personally.
So are you saying I don't like it when you drink, or I don't like rosé?
I don't know what it is. You just complain whenever I have a glass of rosé in my hand.
Yeah, rosé's not
I also
for me.
Have a sparkling red in production.
Oh, yeah, like Lambrusco-ish?
Yeah, it's a Lambrusco style, but I'm producing it out in California, and it's kind of a risky, you know, product.
Why did you go there?
Is it going to be named Panty Dropper? We have a sparkling rosé.
I think we've killed that one, Steve. I think I killed it one too many times.
I can't really say what I'm going to name it after yet, just because of legal things. Okay. But we'll say it's going to involve food that sees a grill.
Okay.
But
why Lambrusco? Why a Lambrusco style?
Why Lambrusco? Because I was a beverage director and I do in-house tastings all the time for people. And when I bring Lambrusco,
they're great.
Producers today, they're amazing and they're great with food.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, you have one with a burger. It's kind of got that cherry Coke element to it. You serve it cold. It's refreshing. Slightly off dry. Kind of gets that, you know, rounds it out. It's just really good with food. And even though it's a really small percentage of the market, when people try it, they go back for more. So
yeah, I like a sparkling rosé. Yeah. I don't like those dry.
Lambrusco's not a sparkling
rosé.
I know what
Lambrusco is. I'm saying a sparkle changes the whole interaction.
It's great with chocolate
food.
Also.
Yes, it's great with chocolate. It's great with a lot of, Lambrusco.
Right, we have to take a quick break.
Sure.
When we come back.
Yeah. Hold that, Mary.
I'm so sorry.
This is David and Nikki Nellis for Fooding the Beast. We'll be right back.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Since the Declaration of Independence, in good times and bad, generations of amazing men and women have stood and fought to protect the freedom that makes our nation great. GEICO would like to wish members of our military a very happy and safe 4th of July weekend. For over 75 years, GEICO's been helping military members save money on their car insurance, and they'd like to do the same for you. So whether you're active duty, guard, reserve, or retired, find out how much you could save with a special military discount from GEICO. GEICO also offers flexible military payment plans. For more information, go to geico.com or call 1-800-MILITARY today to get a fast, free rate quote. That's geico.com or call 1-800-MILITARY. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Mary McCauley, who is a relatively new wine producer. She's got a company called Ripe Life Wines. Her first is Clambake Chardonnay, and my understanding is that the critics really like it. Is that...
Yeah, it's, I mean, it really over-delivers for the price, you know, and it's a well-done product. It's... A lot of people not in the industry don't really understand all this, but it's 100% hand-picked, single vineyard, and yeah, I always seek out a value region so I can really get a deal on grapes, and I don't over-crush them, and really that first bit of juice when you crush a grape is really the most pristine. It's the best. So, yeah, I mean, this one's from Mendocino, which is grows amazing fruit, but it doesn't have that, you know, sexy connotation of Sonoma and Napa and all that. So the grapes are cheaper, but they're just as good. And then I can buy more and crush them more lightly and just produce a really beautiful product.
So as, but every year it could change.
Yes. And that is the challenge, but I also think it's the strength. So every year it could change based on what the market does, what happens with weather. But, you know, what I like to say is I'm not making a copy of an artwork every year. Every year is an original piece, but I'm painting the same thing. And that would be a light, crisp, picked underripe Chardonnay, no oak, no malolactic fermentation. So, you know, and that's a style.
So it's not high butter.
For people who don't know,
a lot of people think of California Chardonnay and they think of that
buttery, yellow wine. Yeah, and also a lot of times that buttery thing, like, it's a really hard thing to pull off as a winemaker.
And a lot of times
it comes oily, not buttery. And it's just not good. And so this is a style a lot of people aren't used to. So I think that, you know, that's one thing that people have responded well to. I also think, you know, Chardonnays, the price has become inflated because people can basically, they can pronounce it. They recognize it. So, you know, so the prices have gone up and yeah, people have responded really well to it. And yeah, I mean, the reason I went this style was because it's perfect for a clam bake. You don't need a buttery Chardonnay at a clam bake because you're dunking everything in butter. So you want a lemony, light, crisp wine. However, because it is Chardonnay, and there are a lot of lemony wines out there, like Albarino and Pinot Grigio and Gruner, however, they don't have the body to really stand up to lobster, potato, sausages, and stuff like that. So, you know, you've got that Chardonnay body. However, the craftsmanship is so light and delicate. It's more citrusy. It's just beautiful with shellfish.
And where can people buy it here?
I'm in a few locations around D.C. I'm in Batch 19, Dean and DeLuca. I mean, a lot of stores throughout Montgomery County, Bottle Shop, Cork and Fork. Actually, Cork and Fork in D.C. also sells it. And then there's a few restaurants, Sonoma Wine Bar, the Tombs was carrying it. Yeah, Rappahannock Oyster Bar, a couple of oyster bars in Virginia.
Excellent.
Maybe Tico.
Maybe
Tico. Maybe we can get a Tico.
As soon as we get out of the building. Does Tico mean tease in Spanish?
No. As soon as we get out of the building, we're going to pop this open on the sidewalk in front of the building.
I know. I can't believe we can't taste it. But
it's unfair.
It is unfair.
It is a really delicious, smooth wine. The reviews have been great. And, you know, if it is risky for me as a new producer, but if I made the Chardonnay and it didn't come out the way that I, you know, as a sommelier, as a culinary graduate, liked it, I would sell it off to a broker and you would never see it under this label. And that's the funny thing with the, So it's a trustworthy label, and it's something that, you know, my friends who text me every Friday, Saturday night, I'm in a wine shop, click, what do I get? Does this work? Click. You know what I mean? Sending me the pictures.
Right.
They, you know, it's for those, you know, those people. They know good wine by taste, but this is just so easy to understand what's going on here.
Great. Well, when your next products come out, please let us know.
Well, absolutely. Are you ripelifewines.com?
Yes.
What are you?
I'm ripelifewines.com. And while I do only have the Clambake Chardonnay now, the Clambake Rosé will be out in 4 weeks. And I'm working on a red project, which you can read a little bit about online. And you can just see more about the company. And
can we order online?
I believe there's so many different laws, as we were just discussing before with chefs.
Every jurisdiction's
different. So, you know, if you want to get it delivered here, I know that Batch 19 and I think Divino's, I know Cork and Fork, they'll deliver if you order a certain amount. But ordering alcohol online is a whole tricky thing.
Right.
It's the laws in this country to drink. Well, are just
you know,
insane.
What you're doing is
the
really
laws in the studio to drink.
I mean,
right. Yeah.
They're more stringent than any. But all what you're doing is really, I mean, it's pure American entrepreneurial
really
spirit.
Are. Oh, thank you.
Just like the hackathon, just like what Michael started. It's
yeah.
great. It's great that you can do this.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be, your last name doesn't have to be Mondavi in order to, you know, to get going in the wine
totally,
business.
Yeah. And I like, you know, what Chef was saying before is that, you know, he's like, it's not this totally authentic restaurant that he's doing, because why am I just going to copy something completely and bring it here? We already have enough of that. He's doing something new and unprecedented, and that's kind of what I'm doing too. I don't
man
think,
she wants to sell
some. I already said I would taste the wine.
So, are you going to start with
well, I just want to say I want to say to so Michael close. That you are my best friend. So let's,
and handsome.
Are you going to start with and, 5 pieces or 10?
You know, I mean, normally, you know, but now alright, so let's get back to Steve and Michael for a last couple of things.
Well, I want to talk about the last cocktail Steve is going to make.
Well, that's what I was going to ask.
Okay, well,
how do you know you would reading my mind?
No.
You were going to make another cocktail.
We were going to make
if
another cocktail.
If you had made it, what would it have been?
It would have resembled a Manhattan, but we call it the P90X.
Okay.
It's a Spanish Manhattan.
It is.
Wow. So we use
P90X. Is that workout thing?
Yeah. It's that workout thing. This actually will burn calories also.
It's loaded,
if you drink
it's
enough
loaded
of them.
With vitamins
will
and
it,
minerals.
Will it burn brain cells as well?
And most definitely.
Okay.
So what is it? How is it kicked up a notch?
It is 90 proof whiskey, which is the 90 piece. It's bullet rye. And then we, instead of traditionally using sweet vermouth, we use Pedro Ximenez sherry. Yeah. That's the grape that's the PX piece is the grape that is used to make traditionally
that
sherry.
Delicious.
And
it's
a little
really
bit of orange,
good.
A little bit of orange bitters, a little Angostura bitters.
So it's a little sweet with the PX or like slightly sweet?
It's I think it's less sweet than a traditional Manhattan. Okay. But it just adds
this.
This
is why God invented Uber, you know that, because who's gonna drink that and drive?
I know.
So what do you do? Do you just swirl the sherry in, or
no? You use it just like you would sweet vermouth.
Okay, same way.
We were at we were actually at Boca Ria, the inventor of the cocktail, Chad Kortner and Christine Kim, and we had this idea to make something fun, less traditional, but incorporate sherry and. You know, we tried a couple with different levels of sweetness, and this was the one that worked out great.
Yeah, the next part, I mean, I know that Tico has gotten a lot of attention for its tequila program, but the whole cocktail culture that we have there is really interesting, and it's not all based on tequila. There's drinks like this, and the
we actually
and
the only have names, one tequila drink.
Yeah, Papa Made Bale. We have a Cashew Caipirinha. We got all kinds
oh, wow.
of stuff there. Really fun.
David Papa Made Bale is an ode to JC, so there's there's Pisco in it.
So let's just get the final on Tico. So right now you're just doing dinner.
Dinner only. We'll start brunch in a few weeks.
Do you think you'll do lunch?
You know, I'd love to do lunch. It really depends on how 14th Street continues to grow
right.
as the residential buildings get filled in and as more retail comes and there's a desire and a need for it. Of course, we would do it.
Right.
Right now, it's still a little
lunch
quiet
is iffy.
At lunch. It's tough a little bit.
Yeah.
But maybe what we'll do is maybe Friday, Saturday, Sunday, something
Some
like that.
Some people are doing that.
Yeah. And but the dinner is 7 days a week. We have a great happy hour. And it's so far so good. You know, the first 3 weeks have been really wonderful. And the reception that we've received from Washingtonians, but also from the restaurant community is what's been really special here.
Well, we have to wrap, unfortunately. Address?
1926 14th Street. It's 14th and U.
14th is
and
like
the new building. What's that building called?
It's called the Louis.
The Louis.
Yeah. Come visit us.
The Louis. All right. Well, as I say every week, everything you heard about on the show today and so much more you can find on Nikki's website, thelistareyouonit.com. Be smart and join 35,000 other subscribers.
I'll do it today.
Because we have Kissed at Camp. No, actually, it's free.
Sleepaway
it's
Camp,
actually
I might
free.
Add. Oh, sleepaway nice. Camp.
Sleepaway, so mommy and daddy can sleep. So also follow her on Twitter. You'll hear her today on WTOP at 12:50 on Thursdays at
12:10. Yes.
I never know what time.
I know, it's okay.
Whatever. So we want to thank Michael, of course, Michael Schlau and Steve Ure from Tico. And Mary, Mary McCauley's got a great thing going. So,
oh, thank you.
I can't wait to try your wine. And also Mariana Cotlier, who's doing that hackathon up there. It was a good show.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Okay, so next week we're going to be off because it's July 4th
Yee
weekend.
Doggies.
So it'll be
oh,
a best right. of Foodie and the Beast.
Have
but
a clam bake.
The following week, oh, right, have a clam bake. Get some clam bake wine.
I know exactly what to get with it.
The following week, we got to spend the day at the Mandarin Oriental. I know. So tough being us. And we checked out their restaurant Muse, and we got a whole 411 on their Empress Lounge and their cocktail program.
And I got pampered.
We went to the spa.